There's nothing more exciting than a big mature herd bull coming in, his eyes rolled back and wanting to stomp another bull.
Welcome to the Hunt Backcountry podcast, presented by Exo Mountain Gear. This podcast and the gear that we produce at Exo Mountain Gear share the same purpose: to make you a more capable, confident, and successful backcountry hunter. Straight to the point, no fluff, and no BS. This show is all about providing you with valuable information from experienced hunters. To learn more about the podcast or about our backcountry hunting packs, please visit exomountaingear.com. Thank you guys for joining us for episode 91. Our guest, once again, is Corey Jacobson. This is different from all the other episodes we've done with Corey, though. We dive straight into your questions, your scenarios, your elk hunting problems, and get Corey's answers. This is the perfect episode to hear pre-season for your next elk hunts, especially if you're going out in September's archery season. Also, want to remind you guys that you can save $10 on Corey's Elk Hunting University. So this is an all-inclusive course online with written content, video content, audio content that covers everything from planning an elk hunt to what to do in the field after you make your shot. I mean, it's literally an A to Z on elk hunting. Just go to elk101.com/online course. If you use the coupon code BACKCOUNTRY, you will save $10 on the course. It's a great deal, great content. Check it out if you're interested. Also, before we dive into the show, we want to thank Creighton Lewis. He left us some great positive feedback on the most recent gear reviews that we did. So if you haven't caught the previous two episodes, we took a deep dive into reviewing headlamps as well as backcountry stoves. The feedback from those episodes has been great, and it's certainly something we want to continue to do in the future. So the question is, what products or what product categories would you like to hear discussed on future episodes? Shoot us a quick note to podcast@exomountaingear.com and let us know. Also, if you're enjoying the show, please consider leaving us a review on iTunes. Okay, let's get into this episode with Corey Jacobson from elk101.com. Corey, welcome back. I think this is, the third or fourth time you've joined us on the podcast. We appreciate it every time.
Absolutely. I'm excited, and especially now leading up to elk season.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we're literally just a few weeks away at this point, so it's exciting, and I'm sure everybody's getting in the zone for sure. And we mentioned when we had you on last, which was just a couple months ago, about maybe getting you back on and talking about some specific scenarios. So that's what we're here to do today. We reached out to guys that, you know, interact with us on social media and asked them what scenarios they wanted feedback on, and maybe looking back at past hunts and thinking, what could we have done differently? What should we have done? And so that's what we're going to kind of walk through today. There's a bunch to cover, so we'll get right into it. We'll start with one here, and I'm just going to go ahead and read it. And this is from Matt. And he says, he's identified and patterned a group of elk via scouting. So going into this year, he said in the early morning, he's nearly always seen them grazing in a high meadow near a ridgeline. Heavy trees and cover surrounding the meadow. So he's saying, getting to opening day and assuming that they're on the same pattern during archery season, how should he set up to be most successful? Should he make his way up towards the ridge as far as possible before calling? Or should he hang back a bit below, try and call and pinpoint their location on opening morning? And then he asked specifically on calling, which we can kind of answer as a part two, should he set up in maybe like the two-person arc method? So kind of what are your thoughts? You have a group scouted. You kind of think you have them patterned. Should you go for it, try and sneak in there, get as close as possible and stay quiet? Or should you maybe get a bit nearby, hang below or hang away from a little bit, and then try and get some calls going to locate their location?
Yeah, and that's, you know, it's always good to have the scouting going for you and know where elk are leading up to opening day for sure. A couple different thoughts come to mind just initially there. First off, if it's a group of bulls, it's different than if it's a group of cows. You know, if you've got a group of bulls in July, August, they might move a long ways by the first part of September as they start looking for cows or as they break up from their bachelor groups and start staging, getting ready for the rut. I'm assuming it's probably a group of cows and maybe there's some younger bulls in with it. And if that's the case, that's great because they aren't going to change their patterns or their habits really as the rut kicks in. The bulls are going to be out looking for them. So if you've got a group of elk, primarily cows, calves, younger bulls located during July or August, it's definitely a great place to be, especially early in the archery season, the first part of September. For me, I think ideally, if I know what they're doing the same thing every day. I've been able to sit back from a distance and kind of watch. The wind's going to dictate everything. So if that meadow is a little bit lower and they're feeding up from the meadow and bedding up higher on that timbered ridge, I would probably start below them and kind of follow them up to that ridge. Either that or be in position somewhere close to that ridge. So when they do come up after the morning feed down in the meadows, they come up to bed, I'm up there and ready. I think for me, if I know they're in there, I'm just going to get as close as I can and kind of go right into the hunt mode rather than the locate mode from the get-go. If they're moving around and they're using a couple different ridges to bed on and you aren't really sure where they're going, then I might get over a ridge and try to locate them first thing on that opening morning or the first morning I'm in there. But ideally, if they're patterned and we know what they're doing and where they're doing it and they're doing it consistently, I'm probably just going to try to get in there, make sure the thermals are in my favor, and get right after it, which probably leads into question number two. What's the calling tactic there? And can you read that last question for me one more time?
Yeah, he was asking about should he set up with the two-person arc method. So I'm assuming he has a partner and then talking about that specific calling setup.
Yeah, and that's my go-to every time. If you can have a two-person setup with a caller and a shooter, I think you're going to be far more effective, whether it's early season, peak rut, whatever it is. Having a caller back behind and a shooter out in front is always going to be more effective. And then, yeah, the arc is always, you want to pay attention to the wind and make sure that shooter's set up on the downwind side of where you're anticipating the elk to come in from. That way, if they do circle down low, they're going to not smell the shooter before they get to the caller, which would kind of defeat the purpose of having the two-person setup if they smell the shooter out in front because they circle down below the shooter. So when we're referring to the arc, you know, it's just basically you draw a straight line from the caller to the elk, and then you always want the wind, if you can position it, so that the wind's coming perpendicular to that straight line, which means you're usually on the same level as the elk. And then as the shooter, when you set up, you don't want to set up along that straight line. You want to get on the downwind side of that line on a, kind of an imaginary arc down below it. So that's how I would set up, regardless of anything. A two-person setup with the arc is the way to go.
Yeah. Corey, with the arc specifically, and obviously this can vary based on, you know, terrain features, cover, etc., but what kind of distances are we talking about? What kind of distances back should the caller get from the shooter? And then what kind of distance off of this perpendicular line between the elk and the caller, how far should that shooter then drop downwind?
Again, yeah, I know it can vary. Yeah, you nailed it there at the beginning. It's going to vary on terrain, on all of that. If you're out in, you know, the open stuff in Arizona or something, you're going to have to be a little bit farther away from the caller as the shooter, because that bull's going to get to a certain point, and when he can see where the calls are coming from, he's probably going to hang up. And so as a shooter, you've got to be far enough out there set up that bull's going to at least come into your shooting lane before he hangs up and starts really looking to pinpoint the caller. And again, it goes the same for the distance off of the arc. When that bull comes in, ideally, when I'm setting up, I try to find a place that just looks like a prime place for an elk to come through, where he's going to feel comfortable. It's going to be open. He's not going to have to fight through a bunch of buck brush or alder brush or anything. He's going to have a good game trail that he can walk in on, feel like his senses are protecting him, and just really make it easy for him to come in. And so it's not so much a distance off of that straight line, that imaginary straight line that I'm worried about setting up. I'm just trying to visualize where's that elk most likely going to come through. He's going to be on the downwind side usually. So if the collar's set up and there's a really good game trail 20 yards below the collar and the thermals are coming down, that elk's probably going to take that game trail in. And so as the shooter, I just want to make sure I'm set up on the downwind side of that game trail. And you kind of just visualize where's that elk most likely coming, going to come in. He's coming in from up on the ridge. He's coming towards the collar. He's probably going to circle around downwind. There's a really prime lane right here for him to walk through. That's, most likely where he's going to approach from. And I just want to make sure that when I'm setting up as the shooter, I'm taking advantage of that and really thinking about where the elk's going to come out.
Hey, Corey, do you have any tips for communication between the caller and the shooter? That's something we've always struggled with in the past. Like if the shooter is 75 yards up there and then the caller's completely blind, I know I've been in both scenarios and like not know what to do, or you're the shooter and you're frustrated that the caller is not calling right. I mean, I think that's an impossible
Oh, right now,
situation.
the bull's right here. Oh,
Yeah.
stop.
But I mean, do you guys have a strategy, or do you ever, as the shooter, like have like a cow call that's meant to communicate back to the caller to do something? Or as the shooter, do you ever even want to make a sound? What's your thoughts there?
Yeah, and communication is important and it's difficult. Like you said, if you aren't visually within sight of each other, it can be hard. And for me, as the shooter, I want to be silent. I don't want that elk to know there's anything there, because if you make a single cow call, that elk's going to pinpoint. He's going to know there was a call that came from there. And when he comes in, he's at least going to have in the back of his mind, there should be an elk standing right here and I don't see it. And he's going to start getting nervous.
Right.
So as a shooter out front, I don't want to make any sound. I don't want to be breaking branches. I don't want to be raking. I don't want a cow call, which makes it tough to communicate. It really, I think, falls on the shoulders of the caller to just be aware of what the bull's doing. If the bull's moving off and you can tell that, you're probably safe to move up a little bit and try to regroup with the shooter. And with us, we get really aggressive and stay really mobile. So a lot of times the shooter is moving with that bull as the bull's moving off. And so the caller really has to just kind of stay dynamic and, not get stuck in one place, but also keeping in mind that if you go bebopping up there and haven't heard anything for a while, that bull may be standing there at 60 yards and just need to take a couple more steps to be in the lane and also blow it out. And
Yeah,
then communication becomes a lot easier at that point.
that happened to me last year. I was calling for Tyler and I thought the elk had moved off, and I just start walking up, and all of a sudden they're freaking just, waving their arms like crazy, telling me to get back and keep calling. And yeah, it's so frustrating. I guess I was hoping you had some magical system there, but it's probably just hunting with your partners and getting used to hunting together and calling elk together.
Absolutely. And once you kind of figure out each other's style and everything, you realize, man, Corey's aggressive. He is up and going after. If that bull turns and moves back 10 yards, Corey's making up that 10 yards. And as the caller, Dirk and Donnie are back there and they're aware of it and they know that. And, there's still times we mess up and
Yeah.
bump the bull or stay too timid and stay back and the bull loses interest. But for the most part, the caller's job is to call that bull in, and as long as you're paying attention to that, typically it usually works out pretty good.
Would you say, do you guys try to make sure that the caller can be seeing the shooter, or is distance more of a priority than that?
It really depends on the terrain. What we don't want is that bull being able to get to a point where he can see where the caller is
Okay.
and, not see an elk. So if we're in an open country, and that bull can get to 120 yards and be able to see through there, and he's like, okay, I don't see elk legs. I hear a bugle coming from that tree, but I don't see an elk. He's going to get nervous and probably not come any closer. So we just want to make sure that the collar sets up in a way that forces the bull to come into the shooting lane before the bull has a chance of seeing the area that the collar's calling from.
Okay.
So it can be, as close as 20 yards. It can be as far as 100 yards. I think ideally, though, the closer we can get the caller to the bull, the better chance we have of calling that bull in. So we really want to push the envelope, get the caller as close to the bull as we can, but then keeping in mind that that shooter has to be out in front enough that the bull is going to come in before it sees the caller.
So all this, especially with the two-person scenario leads into a next story from Clayton. So again, I'm just going to kind of read his scenario here. He said, it's a cold, rainy day, mid-September, archery season, 4.5 miles deep into a wilderness area. A nice mature bull all by himself comes down off a heavy timbered slope across a meadow in the evening. They had been kind of bugling that in that area, Clayton and his buddy, a little bit earlier. They think this bull kind of came in a little bit after the calls, it sounds like, not immediately responding. But anyway, the bull comes in to 150 yards, hangs up a bit, comes in to about 70 yards. Clayton's partner is the shooter. He's set up on the edge of this open meadow. Clayton, as the caller, backs up 50 yards into the timber. So maybe something like an arc, maybe they're in line, he didn't say. So he's saying the bull is bugling with irritation. Clayton's calling, he's interrupting, he's cutting the bull's calls off. He also did some raking, some branch breaking. The bull's fired up, he's tearing up 10-foot jack pines in the meadow, but he won't come in for a fight. So Clayton does some cow talk as well, facing him, does some cow talk facing away. Bull bugles again. Clayton cuts him off again with an aggressive bugle. The bull comes in to as close as 50 yards, but no closer. Clayton's buddy, sensing that the bull wasn't going to come any closer, takes a shot, unfortunately misses. So Clayton's asking, what, if anything, should he have done different as the caller, or maybe with a setup that could have maybe convinced that bull to come all the way in and come in for a fight?
Yeah, that's a great question. And, you know, when I offer the answers to these situations, it's important to keep in mind that these answers aren't the right way or the only way necessarily. It's just kind of the first thing that comes to mind for me, and from experience, it goes back to visual. And it's tough to call a bull in across a meadow. They'll get to the edge of the meadow and come part way, but they're exposed out in the open. And when it's really tough to get a bull to commit to come all the way across the meadow and then go into the timber on the other side. And when you think about it, a lot of times those bulls will come out of the timber and they'll skate the edge of a meadow. And the bull's thinking the same thing. If there's another bull back there, why isn't he coming to the edge of the meadow, at least so I can get a visual? And for that bull to expose himself and go all the way across the meadow, it can be difficult. So anytime I can, if I can, I try to get on the other side of the meadow and get on the timber side where the bull is, or at least have the shooter set up on that side. And maybe I stay over 10 or 15 yards back into the timber to pull the bull out into the open on the other side. But actually getting a bull to commit and come all the way across the meadow into the timber on the other side can be really tough. And in that same situation for the shooter really can't get out in the middle of the meadow. So he's got to stay on the timber, and it can be really hard to convince that bull to come that last 70 or 100 yards close to the timber on our side of the meadow. So setting up, you know, it's important to keep that in mind that calling a bull across the meadow can be tough. So you've got to get on their side or find where there's some timber, a finger of timber coming out into the meadow where you can get out there part way. But again, it just comes back to visual. That elk wants to see another bull, and he's just at that comfort zone where if he gets any closer, he starts feeling uncomfortable that he can't see an elk and maybe feels like he should.
Yeah. What are your thoughts, Corey, in a scenario like that? And that the shooter in this case took that shot at 50 yards. He missed, not at all saying he wasn't capable of taking a 50 yard shot, but for a guy who maybe has a shot, maybe the elk's at 60, 70, the guy who has the shot, but the bull's hanging up and it's a bit outside the guy's effective range or what he's comfortable shooting. Do you just hang in there with patience? I mean, at some point, do you throw everything at him with calls? Do you maybe go quiet and see if his curiosity's peaked and just play it patient? Any kind of thoughts on that one?
You know, it's tough because you're kind of locked down in that situation. When you're on the edge of that meadow, you can't move closer. You really can't do much of anything there as far as, you know, getting aggressive and pushing in. So you're kind of stuck just with your calls. But honestly, I really think once that bull hangs up, there's not going to be much to convince him to break loose and come in closer. He doesn't feel comfortable and it's going to be hard. So I might just go quiet. And I would say 90% of the time, he's not going to come in any closer. He's going to turn and walk off kind of uninterested. but I'm going to let him get to the other side of the meadow and get the timber. Then I'm going to sprint across the meadow and get the timber with him and set up and hammer him again. Just like, you know, it's important to think like an elk. And if that bull's walking off thinking there's an elk hung up in the timber, and he gets back into the timber going back up the ridge where he came from, and all of a sudden this bull's behind him and pressures him again, he's going to be a lot more likely to come back to that edge of the timber feeling comfortable, knowing he just walked through there and there wasn't danger. And so I would just let him kind of cool off and walk away, get over there, find a good setup, and then pressure him pretty hard once we have a good setup and a good situation on his side of the meadow.
Okay. Yeah, that's interesting. And you would, if he heads back across the other side, gets back into the timber, you would most likely just sprint through the meadow and not try to do some big circle around in terms of trying to keep cover in the timber and all that?
Yeah, it depends. I mean, if we know he's heading out, he's heading back up the ridge, if he's bugling as he goes, and we know he's a couple hundred yards up the ridge in the timber, I'd probably run straight across. But if he's, you know, hanging out on the other side raking or wallowing or something just inside the timber, yeah, we're definitely going to be careful and skate around the edge, make sure we're concealed.
Okay, perfect. All right, well, those were two pretty detailed stories and scenarios, and then we had a bunch of other questions and comments and feedback on scenarios that kind of fall into different categories. And so these are no one story, but just a bunch of guys who commented, and, you know, they all kind of came into these categories that we can hit. A first one, which isn't necessarily a scenario, but was just a question from a soon-to-be first-time elk hunter, David, who's getting ready to go on his first elk hunt this year. I thought it would be interesting to hear from your perspective, Corey, and maybe some stories I'm sure you have. He was asking, have you ever, quote-unquote, hunted another hunter or called other hunters in? So David is a first-time elk hunter, hearing about elk calling, and obviously thinks these things. I'm sure you have some stories.
Oh, totally. No, and, you know, I think over the years I've kind of picked up, I still get fooled by calling, and you don't have to be a great caller to fool the human ear necessarily. If you get a good, clean bugle, hit the high note and drop off, you know, it can be hard to differentiate between an elk and a human. And I've definitely heard bugles before and set up and, you know, took a couple calls before I realized, I think that's a human. And on the flip side, you know, I've called other hunters in. For me, what gives it away, though, is the chuckles. And anytime a hunter chuckles, I can, there's maybe 5 or 10 people in the world, I think, that might be able to fool me. And probably once you key in on it, fool the rest of the hunters. But chuckles usually for me give it away that that's a hunter. But yeah, there's, you know, we used to hunt really deep, steep stuff up in North Idaho in high school and college. And several times we'd be down in the bottom of this hole with the road up on the ridge, a good, you know, 2 miles or so straight up the mountain. And somebody would be up there on a four-wheeler driving the road, and they'd get out, walk out the ridge and let out a bugle. You could hear the four-wheeler go across. They get out there and let out a bugle. And there are a couple times we played some pretty mean tricks, sounding as much like a big old bull down there as we could. And they'd make it about 3/4 of the way down the mountain, and we'd just go quiet, move over into the next drainage, and leave them down there wondering where that bull disappeared to. But it's that last year in New Mexico, we had a situation where some guys set up. We knew they were hunters, and I bugled a couple times trying to get a response on the other side of the ridge. And they had cow called and bugled a couple times, and I thought, okay, we're close here. Let's just go in and talk to them. So we started walking in there. Well, they had thought we were an elk, and then hearing us walking across the rocky terrain, they thought the elk were coming in, and the guy was, you know, tension on the string, ready to draw, and we popped out at 20 yards. And so it definitely happens, and I think it happens to all of us, especially if we're hunting in areas where there is some more hunting activity and pressure in there. But again, trying to listen to those chuckles and differentiate that, you know, that sounds like a human a little bit more than an elk. And obviously we've all been fooled and walked away from a real elk only to glass back across the ridge 150 yards and see a bull standing there and realize we messed up.
Yeah. The very first thing.
We have a famous elk called Bubbles that did that to us. Sounded like somebody was blowing bubbles through a bugle tube. That's the worst bugle we've ever heard. Sure enough, little like raghorn bull walks out of the trees and we're walking away.
The very first thing I ever called in was another hunter. So you can imagine, like, as me, like, you know, I'm calling and I'm hearing something come in. It's my very first encounter of something coming in. Oh man, I was just shaking, just flowing with adrenaline. And then at about 35 yards, I catch a bit of movement. And then I'm like, oh no, that's not an elk. But I kind of did the same thing. I was kind of like, oh man, should I just like shut up and go quiet and let to see if this guy wanders off? But he, you know, he just kept coming in. It was interesting. This episode of the Hunt Backcountry podcast is brought to you by the folks at First Light. Not only is First Light's apparel incredibly high-performing, with their new camouflage patterns, it's incredibly deceptive to game. One really cool page to go check out, go hit firstlight.com/cipher, which is C-I-P-H-E-R dash fusion. That's going to show you the technology behind both of their cipher and fusion patterns, as well as compare and contrast how those patterns differ. They share a lot of the same science and technology behind them, but they're targeted toward different environments for exactly what you need. So again, go to firstlight.com/cipher-fusion and check out the camouflage offerings that First Light has. All right, so a common question, especially as we head into this, you know, first week of season, opening day, maybe it's early and warm. Tips for finding elk when they're not talking.
Yeah, that's a tough one. And for me, I always say, you know, scouting in the summer is great. It gives me an idea of the lay of the land. I can get an idea of there's been previous rut activity and there's some of those things, but I really prefer to scout with my bugle tube. And, you know, it just means covering country on a ridge and trying to get an answer. And if a bull answers, I know there's elk there. If they don't answer, I'll just assume there aren't and move on. But early in the season when they aren't calling, it's tough to locate elk. And I think a year like this year, you know, especially here in Idaho, it's super dry. It's about as dry as I've seen it in a long time. And coming off of a winter and a spring where we had a lot of moisture and good snowpack, you know, I was really expecting to have 4 foot tall green grass everywhere in September, and it's not the case here this year. So I think water is going to be important. You know, there's a lot of areas where there was a lot of runoff and a lot of water for a long time that's really drying up fast. And over the next 3 weeks, if we don't get moisture, water is going to be important. So elk have to have water in this heat, especially early in the season. They need a cool, comfortable place to hang out during the day. So the north facing slopes near water where they have good cover are going to be obvious places to check out. If you have trail cameras, that can be a great way to find out what's moving through there, because the elk are still going to move. They're going to get up. They're going to feed. Even if they aren't vocal, they're still going to go through the motions. So trail cameras can be good. But ultimately, for me, from the day archery season opens until the day it closes, I'm looking for an elk that's bugling. And it's tough. You know, sometimes it's dry and hot and full moon and just don't get a lot of vocal activity. But I'm still, that just means I have to work that much harder to find an elk that will talk. Because it's tough to locate elk if they aren't talking.
Yeah. Yeah, along those lines, CJ asked, what signs tell you to pack up and move on because the elk just aren't there? Like, at what point do you just, all right, this is a bust, let's go to plan B or plan C or what have you?
Yeah, and I used to be guilty of just staying there, you know, the whole week, just they've got to be here, it looks too good, you know, they just aren't talking, we just need to cover this drainage and go into this area and just get caught in that rut, and pretty soon you're out of days and it's like, well, you have one day left. Where do you want to go tomorrow? And you go there and there's elk everywhere and you realize you should have left 5 or 6 days ago. So anymore, honestly, I'll spend a day in an area, but if I'm not seeing fresh beds and fresh tracks and fresh rubs, or hearing bugles, I'm probably going into a completely different drainage the next day. I don't see a point of going back and hoping the elk show up. I'm going to go and find where the elk are. So literally a day. And if there's not sign enough to convince me that there's elk in there and I might have a chance of getting an elk to bugle, I'm moving to a new area and looking for an elk that's ready to talk.
Yeah. I mean, we talk about a new area, Corey, and I'm sure, again, this varies, but you mentioned a new drainage. You're not necessarily driving to the other side of the unit or what have you, but, you know, just crossing into a new drainage over a ridge, over a major terrain feature where you feel like you're calling from that previous day sort of hasn't broadcast elk that aren't there.
Yeah, and you know, we'll cover 10 or 12 miles pretty easily in a day. Okay, we won't cover it easily, but most days it's not uncommon to cover 10 or 12 miles. It's very, very rarely easy to cover, but covering a lot of ground. And so at the end of that hike, at the end of that day, we've usually made a great big circle. And if I haven't got a bugle or seen any sign in there to convince me to go back, I'm kind of crossing that area off the map, and I'm finding another area that I can go and make another 10 or 12 mile hike if I need to, and just cover a bunch of country. And sometimes it might be going back up the same, you know, from the same trailhead and just going to the east instead of the west the next day. But mostly it involves a couple miles down the road and hitting a new drainage that runs into the same canyon we're hunting. But yeah, that we didn't touch with our bugles the day before. And other times it might be, hey, let's just go to the other end of the unit and see if, you know, they aren't calling here at 10,000 feet. Let's go to the other side of the unit where it's down at 4,000 feet and see if they're down low this year, or vice versa, or, you know, whatever it is. But I always have at least 6 or 8 areas marked within the general area I'm hunting to check out that are kind of separate hunts on their own.
Yeah, perfect. These questions are kind of related as well to being out all day and working that bugle tube and doing that. But Joe was wondering how you change your calling sequence for morning and evening when elk might be on their feet versus calling to potentially bedded bulls midday.
So honestly, I don't change my calling sequence to call them in or to locate them. So I'm doing the same thing from the minute we start calling in the morning, you know, at daylight. I'm just on a ridge locating, just throwing out a location bugle till I get a response. And whether that's at 6:30 in the morning or at noon, once I get a response, it's the same. I get as close as I can and go through the challenge sequence. And, you know, I would prefer to hunt elk in the middle of the day. They aren't moving. The bulls, he has no reason to get up and follow the cows or move away. He's protective of his area, doesn't want another bull coming in and intruding close to his cows. There's just a lot of benefits to calling in the middle of the day. And if you can get an area where there's consistent thermals, which usually from 10 o'clock till 2 o'clock in the afternoon, you've got pretty consistent thermals coming up. A lot of times from 2 to 5 or 6, you'll get some swirling winds, a little bit of afternoon wind gusts. But at 10 to 2, it's just kind of the magic hour. The bulls bed down, they aren't on the move, but they're really easy to agitate and get them coming in. So yeah, my calling sequence doesn't change at all for locating or for setting up and calling the elk in.
Yeah, this is probably a good opportunity to expand on that challenge sequence you mentioned, but Spencer is asking about hunting herd bulls that potentially might respond to calls, but maybe refuse to leave cows that bull is with. So kind of tell us a little bit about your challenge sequence and then any other tactics that you take if you know a bull is with cows.
Yeah, and that's a great point. You know, when a bull, especially a herd bull, gets herded up, and when we're talking herd bulls, we're talking the mature bull that's doing the majority of the breeding. A lot of times the first weekend, you'll have a, you know, mature 6-point with the cows. That might not actually be the herd bull that comes in September 15th and starts doing the breeding. But when you get that big mature bull that's doing the breeding, a lot of times they don't even hang out with the herd until a cow comes into estrus. Then they come in and kind of take over and let the younger bulls have done all the work. Those younger bulls have rounded the cows up. They've ran around screaming their head off like they're the king of the herd. And then once a cow comes in estrus, that big herd bull comes in. He takes over the herd. He, you know, hangs with them for 10 days, whatever, breeds the cows, and then he rides off into the sunset. And getting that big herd bull to come to calls can be tough. And there's a couple reasons. Number one, they're older and wiser. They've heard calls before. They've been pressured. They kind of know the routine. Number two, it's later in the season, so there have been more people out there calling, and they're a little bit more wise to the calls towards the end of the season than they would be early. And then the third one is they've got cows in estrus, which is all that they're focused on during the rut. And they would much rather hang out with a cow in estrus than go and fight and take a chance of getting beat and losing all their cows, or having a satellite bull come running in while they're off, you know, fighting another bull, and having one of those satellite bulls steal a cow. So getting them away from their cows during that peak rut can be tough. But the beauty of the challenge sequence is those bulls still have the desire to fight, and they will fight sometimes even harder to protect their harem that they, you know, they want to hold on to for the next week or two. And if you get close and pressure them and know what to say and how to say it, even those big mature herd bulls that have cows that won't ever come into a call, if you can get in close enough and pressure them just right and challenge them just right, they'll break loose and come in. And when they come in, it's, you know, they're looking for somebody to stomp. And there's nothing more exciting than a big mature herd bull coming in, his eyes rolled back and wanting to stomp another bull. And as the shooter out in front, knowing that he not even aware that you're there, it's a pretty fun experience for sure.
Yeah. Brandon actually asked about kind of those closing yards, and he was saying he can get within 100, 150 yards of elk pretty consistently, but it's that last 100 yards where he eats a lot of tag soup because he just can't, you know, close the deal there. So, you know, calling, any strategies or even those other things, you know, should you just be more aggressive? I mean, it's hard to say, obviously, without specific scenarios, but what are your tips on really closing those deal in the last final yards?
You know, that's welcome to archery hunting right there. That last 100 yards, I always say that archery hunting starts where rifle hunting ends, and it's usually that 200 to 300 yards, you know, where a rifle hunt usually ends, that's where archery hunt really starts. It's working that magic and really closing the distance from 300 yards down to 50 yards or closer. And it can be tough. And really, you have to think what's going through a bull's mind. What is it that will cause him to hang up or to prevent him from coming in that final distance? And when you think about it, elk are, you know, those bulls are, they're thinking about two things. They're thinking about breeding and they're thinking about fighting. And realistically, they want to come into cow calls to breed. They want to come into bugles to fight. And if they aren't, you have to step back a little bit and say, okay, what's the reason for it? And when you break it down, there's really not a whole lot of different reasons that it could be, or different excuses why that elk won't come in. And so just understanding, okay, it's a young bull. He's timid. He doesn't want to get beat up. Maybe I can't be as aggressive. Or it's a mature herd bull that has cows. He doesn't want to come in because he's focused on the cows. Okay, I've got to pressure him and get close. So just understanding kind of, you know, it's early season. They haven't been pressured, but they aren't really rutting a lot yet. You're going to have to get in a little bit closer and put more pressure on them, especially if it's a bigger bull. You get into that rut where the herd bulls come in and start chasing the younger bulls off and really establish that harem, those younger bulls are going crazy and delirious over a cow call. So, you know, sometimes they'll come running in, and if they don't, you have to say, okay, why isn't he coming in? Is it my setup? Is he not comfortable coming in? Has he been beat up a couple times by big bulls and my bugle's pushing him away? You know, just really thinking through the options of why he isn't coming in. But ultimately, that last 100 to 150 yards, the key to getting elk into a setup using calls, especially closing the distance, is the setup. And it's getting close before you set up. So if you can get inside 150 yards, slipping in and then setting up, it's going to be a lot easier to pull that bull in 100 yards than if you start at 500 yards and try to pull him in 400 yards or 450 yards. So getting close before you set up and start calling is important. And then the other thing is just that setup, making sure the bull is going to come to 100 yards and not be able to see the caller. Because if he gets to 100 yards and can see where the caller is calling from, that's where he hangs up and he's not coming any closer. Calling so that they aren't coming uphill, getting on the same level. If you are above that elk, he's going to feel like he's at a physical disadvantage coming up the hill. And so he might hang up at 100 yards and say, I just don't feel comfortable coming up underneath another bull elk. And on the flip side, if he gets to 100 yards and he's above you, he can probably see a good vantage point. He said, I'm going to sit right here until I am comfortable and see another elk. I'm not going to go down there and take a chance that it's danger. So just all of those things, you really have to think like an elk and say, okay, if I'm an animal that has really keen senses, and I'm trying to stay alive, what do I need to do so that he still feels comfortable, but he isn't able to use his senses to detect me? And that's really the key to that final 100-yard call in and getting that bull into your lap and into your shooting lane.
Yeah, that's a great summary.
So ideally, you want to go to get side hill?
Yeah, for a whole bunch of reasons, I want to be at the same level as that elk. And, you know, like I said, the visual advantage they have if they're above you, the physical disadvantage they have if they're below you, can make it tough to call them up or down to you. The other thing is thermals, and thermals are typically traveling either down the mountain or up the mountain. And just by virtue of how thermals work, the air is either moving up or down. And when it switches, it usually switches 180 degrees. You know, the sun's out, the hillside's warm, the thermals are coming up, and then a cloud comes over and it starts cooling the ground. Thermals switch, and when they do, they usually switch 180 degrees. Very rarely will you have thermals blowing across side hills. So if you're coming in on the same level as the elk on the side hill and the thermals do switch, you have a lot better chance of not getting busted by the thermals going straight away from you and then switching to going straight to the elk.
I know you don't do too much solo hunting, Corey. Thankfully, I have some awesome partners that you're typically always working with. But Mike was wondering about any calling strategies, setups for solo hunters. Obviously, things like the arc, things like the collar dropping back out of the game. So for the guys who do have to hunt solo, what should they be paying extra special attention to in terms of calling setups?
You know, it's really the exact same game. The only thing is you don't have the advantage of having a caller back behind you. So you've got to broadcast the sounds behind you more. And that's really what I try to do is make it almost like there is a caller and a shooter, but I have to play both of those parts. So I'm trying to make my calls sound like they're 40 or 50 yards behind me so that the bull has to come a little closer before he really has a good idea of where those calls are coming from. And that's done by, you know, turning your head. The bugle tube is a really good amplifier. And if you blow right to the elk, they can pinpoint you really good. But if you turn to the side or turn behind you, you can throw, you know, a bull's sense of hearing, you can throw it off a bit. And so just muffling it to make it sound like it's 40 yards behind you. Or when you cow call, just make a very faint little cow call so he can hear it. But he's like, I don't know exactly where that came from. Another thing that works is if you're in terrain that allows you to move, you know, you get 120 yards from the bull, you cow call, he answers, you get hammering with a challenge bugle, and then run ahead 20 or 30 yards and set up, hoping that he comes in looking a little bit beyond where you're actually set up for where that call came from. But it all boils down to the same thing. And again, terrain is going to change that. You know, solo hunting in thick terrain can be a little bit easier than solo hunting in open terrain, because you get a bull that can stop and see where the calls are coming from at 150 yards. It's going to be a lot harder to get him in. But if he has to come in to 40 or 50 yards before he can even see where the calls are coming from, it gives you a little bit more of an opportunity to either move ahead or throw him off by 20 yards and get him into your shooting lane as a solo caller. And it comes down to some bulls are just, they'll walk right into the caller. You know, they'll walk right into 20 yards before they start getting too suspicious or wary. And if you get the right bull on the right day and you're in a good setup, solo hunting can be very effective as well.
Yeah.
Hey, Corey, have you ever... like, I was just thinking about if a bull hangs up and you know he's going to hang up, do you stop right there or do you keep trying? You know what I mean? Like, I was just thinking back at a hunt a few years ago and had a bull come to the edge of an opening. You know, Jason was 70 yards away. I was behind him. You knew the bull wasn't coming. Like, it was hung up and we just kept trying for 30 minutes and eventually the bull walked off. Have you ever just like, realize that was a situation, stopped and tried to like back out and come out from a different angle, or would you keep kind of hammering at it?
You know, I usually keep hammering at it. I'll throw every call I can at it. Raking trees, obviously, that's something that I'm going to throw mm-hmm. into every calling sequence, because it really does break loose some of those bigger bulls sometimes that hang up. You start raking, and sometimes that's enough between the challenge and now you're displaying your dominance to, get them to break loose and come in. One thing we found that works really good is on those bulls that hang up at like 100 yards, we've sat there for 20 or 30 minutes just going back and forth, and you can tell they go from real aggressive to they start losing kind of that fire, and you feel like you're losing the situation. You know that it's going the wrong direction. They aren't escalating. They're they're kind of losing interest and aggression. And one of the things we found that works good is that caller. So we call it the slingshot, but basically the caller comes up as close to the shooter as he can, or maybe all the way to the shooter, and screams in that bull's face. So you just moved in 40 or 50 yards. You're giving away the shooter's location kind of, but you're putting more pressure on that bull. You're really getting in his face and challenging him. And then as soon as you do that, the caller starts moving back. And, you know, he moves back 40 or 50 yards or whatever, hoping that that bull is going to come in another 20 or 30 yards. And when he gets there, then, you know, he kind of forgets the bull had come up that close. Now it's back there. He's focused on coming in. He's committed to coming in. And the caller is able to continue pulling him through that setup. So that's one thing we do that's worked really well. I was hunting last year and it was just me and a camera guy. And we had a bull. It was a younger bull, you know, 260 inch 6-point, maybe even a little smaller, just a young 6-point. He had two cows. It was the very end of September. And the big herd bull in there had all the cows. And this young bull was just timid. He wasn't about to come in and fight because he had two cows and he knew he'd probably lose them. And so he just hung back there like 120, 130 yards. And I did everything. I cow called, I challenged, I grunted, I squealed, I chuckled, I raked. I did everything that I knew of to try to convince that bull to come in, and he just wouldn't. And so I told the camera guy, I said, just stay right here. He was over my shoulder. We had great shooting lane. And I said, just stay right here. I'm going to move back 40 yards behind you and just go through the same thing again. And within 2 minutes, the bull was standing 20 yards from the camera. And so just sometimes, you know, pressuring them like that and then moving off, it just gives them, you know, whether they don't feel comfortable coming through an opening there with you right there. And if you move back a little bit, they're like, okay, I've got a little bit of a buffer here. I can move in closer and make sure it's safe there. So if I have a bull that hangs up, I'm going to throw everything I can at him. If that doesn't work, I'm going to back out, try to slingshot him in. And then ultimately, if it doesn't work, I'll let him walk off and regroup and get in a new area and go and hammer him again. I'm very persistent, though. If there's a bull that's still talking, I will keep pushing him until dark and hope that eventually he just gets tired.
Okay. Wear him down. Just be a nag.
Yep, exactly.
Awesome. Do you ever turn to, I mean, besides obviously locating, do you ever just get to an area, have a sense, or just what, for whatever reason, want to turn to a cold calling setup with any kind of cow talk or anything like that, Corey?
Yeah, especially early, and I'll do that a little bit. I'm very impatient, so for me to just sit there for 40 minutes and not know if there's any elk in the area or not, and just hope something comes sneaking in, I lose patience really quickly. But it can be effective. If we're walking along early in the season, nothing's bugling, and all of a sudden we smell elk, and there's fresh signs and fresh beds and a fresh rub or something, yeah, I'll definitely find a good lane and a good place, and we'll set up. And still the same thing. We'll have a two-person setup, paying really close attention to the wind. Because when those elk come in silent, they're very wary. They're curious. They're cautious. And they're definitely going to circle around wind. So making sure that there's a shooter out in front, just silent, sitting there watching really closely for movement. But it can be effective. There's no doubt if you get in an area where there's five or six younger bulls, and they're kind of, they broke up from their bachelor herds, but they're staged there waiting for the rut. They aren't going to be the big herd bulls, and it's a little bit early for them, and they aren't talking yet. It can be real. We've had situations where we've had four or five bulls come into some blind calling setups, and, you know, we aren't too picky about making sure it's a big herd bull before we punch the trigger, and we've been successful doing that for sure. I think for me, though, the patience side of it, it's kind of a last resort. And the other thing is just the excitement and the thrill of calling, being able to interact with them. I think sometimes I'll walk past a bull that's not calling just to try to find one that is.
Speaking of impatient, and you kind of said you're not going to wait around 40 minutes. At the same time, do you give yourself a minimum of, I need to stick this out, you know, 15 minutes after the calling sequence? Or do you have any sort of those personal rules?
You know, when it comes to like the blind calling, I think that, you know, we've sat before and done some calling, pulled out the trail mix, ate it, took a little nap and woke up and gave out a few more cow calls. And 5 minutes later, a bull elk, you know, standing 20 yards from us. So it really, you know, if they're across the canyon and they think, oh, there's a cow over there, I'm going to head over that way and just check it out. But they feed their way over, they stop at a wallow, whatever. It might take 30 or 40 minutes for them to work in. and they might get to 100 yards and stand there for 20 minutes and not move, just listening and seeing if there's any danger. So, yeah, I think if you're doing that, patience is definitely the key. And if I was serious about it, I'd probably say 30 or 40 minutes minimum to sit there and just kind of watch and give out a cow call every 3 or 4 minutes. I wouldn't overdo it, but just enough to make them curious and have something come walking in.
All right, man, that's most of the questions that we wanted to hit today. One thing I wanted to make sure we covered with you, Corey, is you kind of teased us a bit on the last episode a couple months ago with this big project that you were so excited about but couldn't tell us about, but I know you can tell us now. So what has changed in the last 2 months with this big project that you were teasing us about before?
Actually, just about a week and a half ago, we were able to launch the project. And it is a film that I've spent the last year and a half working on with Sitka and Yeti and the Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation. And it's really just a deep look into the passion and the history of calling elk. And the film is called The Linguists. And it was, you know, it's so hard because I love elk hunting. I love calling elk. And last season, we got some incredible footage, some incredible content. And I couldn't share any of it. I couldn't tell people much about anything. And as you know, you start talking about elk hunting, you just want to share all of these experiences, and I couldn't. So it's great now to be able to talk about it. I had an opportunity to be in the homes of what I would consider to be the four pioneers of elk calling, kind of the forefathers of elk calling, and to be able to be in the home of Will Primos and Wayne Carlton and Larry Jones, and then my dad, Rocky Jacobson, and visit with them about their passion for elk calling, to see the innovation that they had back in the 70s for developing calls to be able to call in elk, and just to be able to sit there and share some of our favorite elk hunting memories and experiences with those people who were my heroes growing up and who really, you know, helped kind of ignite that fire and that passion for elk hunting and elk calling, and to be able to work with them and be involved in this project at that level with them was just a dream come true for someone like me.
Yeah, absolutely. So what's the best way to catch the film? Where can listeners
get to it? So the film, anybody can watch it. It's just out on YouTube on the Sitka Gear page. And if you just go to YouTube and do a search for The Linguist, it'll pop up and get an incredible traction, lots of views, and still working on promoting it and sharing it. And it's been really cool because I knew that we were going to be able to tell a story that would resonate with elk callers. But it's been really cool to have, we did a launch. So we did kind of a pre-screening at the Big Sky Total Archery Challenge 2.5 weeks ago. And Ben Potter, who was the brilliance and the talent behind all of the filming, he's the one that followed me around with the red camera all season last year and then did all the editing and everything on the film. He was there, and he's from California. And a lot of his friends are not hunters at all. And they came up there to surprise him for his birthday, and they were there for the screening. And it was amazing afterwards to hear them chattering like little kids about how awesome it was to see that passion and how excited they were. They wanted to go and call in an elk, and they'd never had a desire to do that before. And they said, you know, we don't hunt, but now we understand the passion for it that you have. And I think the film has a really good potential to reach across those borders to some of those who don't hunt. And if nothing else, you know, help them understand some of the passion we have for it. It's not just about killing an elk. There's a whole adventure within calling elk that we live for each September. And obviously our goal is to put a tag on an elk, and we like to fill the freezer, but we love calling elk, and I think the film does a good job of sending that message.
Yeah. Awesome. Corey, just to wrap up, you know, thinking through the listeners who don't have as much experience hunting elk yet, maybe they're going on their first hunt this fall, maybe they're going on their third or fourth or fifth or sixth or seventh, but they haven't even killed an elk yet. What's your kind of like last word of encouragement or advice to those guys?
There's three things. Pay attention to the wind. pay attention to the wind, and pay attention to the wind. And, yeah, I mean, that's, no, I'll give you a couple more too, but the wind is so critical for a newer hunter. And we just sometimes, you know, even hunters that have been out there 10 or 15 years that have been fairly successful, sometimes don't pay as much attention as they need to the wind. And I hunted with Randy Newberg 2 years ago in Montana, and Randy's from back east, you know, or the, I guess, Midwest, Northern Midwest, Minnesota area, and grew up whitetail hunting and all that. And whitetail hunters, they pay attention to the wind. And the first night we were there hunting together, we came back and he said, I am such a newbie at this, or, you know, something along those lines that I had no idea how important the wind was. I check the wind continually. And he said, you know, coming from an old whitetail hunter, my practice of checking the wind was twice as aggressive, I guess, as what he thought it needed to be. So just paying so close attention always to the wind is critical. Be confident in your calling. Don't feel like you have to be a world champion caller or even a great caller. Just be able to make some basic calls and be confident in that and put that emotion into the calls that you need to express to the elk. And then the last one is just stick with it. Don't give up. And it gets discouraging. We're out there, we want to put our tag on an elk, and after 3 or 4 days of what we would consider to be failures, it can be easy to throw in the towel and just think, I'm going home. You know, got work to do. I'm wasting vacation time. It's hot. You know, my family, my wife's having a hard time. The kids are being rough, and, you know, whatever it is, there's all of these things that we can really find ways out of an elk hunt. But at the end of the day, it's persistence and hard work that brings success. So stick with it and don't give up, and you'll be successful.
Awesome. Corey, thank you so much for sharing all of your years of wisdom and your perspective with us, for sure. Covered some good ground. I'm sure that most of our listeners are already doing this, but just before we wrap up, where can guys stay up to date with everything you have going on, everything with Elk 101, and kind of catch what's coming next from you guys?
Yeah, no, just visit us at elk101.com. At the bottom of the homepage, there's a sign up for our newsletter. And if you're on that, I keep everybody informed of everything that's going on through that newsletter. And again, social media, Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, be sure and follow us, like us, subscribe, whatever there. And we've got a lot of really good sponsors and partners that like to help us promote the passion we have for elk and elk hunting. And we have some pretty good giveaways and contests from time to time. So anyway, you can follow us. We'll make sure that you're not in the dark for anything we have going on.
Perfect. Thank you, Corey.
Absolutely.
Thanks, Corey. Thank
you. Yep. Thanks, Steve. Thanks, Mark.
Well, that's a wrap on this one. Thank you guys so much for tuning in to the Hunt Back Country podcast. It's because of your comments, your feedback, and your consistent listening to this show that we continue to do it. Up next, we have a couple more shows from other elk experts. We're going to be joined by Chris Rowe and also by Paul the Elk Nut Medell. So Corey and Chris and Paul, they all have different kind of philosophies or different emphasis on their hunting. And it's fantastic because we can learn from all of them. We can take invaluable information from each of them. So hopefully you guys enjoy these episodes. Hopefully they help you get out in the field and find success. As always, we'd love to hear from you, whether that's comments, questions, or feedback, or even just to hear and see how your hunts went. Share your story and your field photos with us. Our email address is podcast@exomountaingear.com. And again, if you're enjoying the show and can leave us a review, please do that in iTunes or Stitcher or wherever else you might be listening to this.